Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. Did you know you could get CDs from us and listen to a year's worth of Real Science Friday shows on one CD? It is so much fun. In fact, I'm holding in my hand the Real Science Friday 2011 CD. It's an MP3 CD. Play it in an MP3 player or even play it in a DVD player or your computer. So you can get it for 2011, 2010, all the way back to 2006. If you'd like hundreds of Real Science Friday shows convenient on a single MP3 CD, and it'll support the airing of Real Science Friday. So just call us at 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278, or go online, realsciencefriday.com, and click on the store. And of course, that'll help us continue to broadcast. May God bless you. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment, and in his seat is microbiologist Kevin Anderson. Kevin, welcome back to Real Science Friday.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
You're with the Creation Research Society. 2 years ago, you were here. We talked about how awesome the human genome is, the DNA, how complex. Could we start there and then come forward? We'll talk about maybe epigenetics, what our chromosomes are doing. So bring us into the topic. As a microbiologist, you seem to be in awe of DNA.
Oh, DNA is an amazing molecule to study. I think I may have stated this before. It's a great time to be a creation geneticist.
Yeah.
Every year just brings out new discoveries, new information that just leaves us even more breathless, leaves the evolutionists even more dumbfounded. If you recall, you know, in the year 2000, 2001, when the sequence first came out, they were very much bragging, very much pompous that this just destroyed creation. This just proved evolution. You guys are just dead in the water. I actually had a scientist tell me that some of the representatives in Congress were scared about the data because so many of their constituents were those fundamentalist Bible thumpers.
Right.
And this was going to so destroy their understanding.
And the opposite has happened.
Just 2 weeks ago,
Gallup has come out with a survey. They've been doing this for 30 years. And today there are more Americans, not fewer.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a slight increase, who believe that God made human beings sometime in the last 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. It went from 44% to 46%. And we've been reporting on the tens of thousands of U.S. medical doctors and the thousands of public high school science teachers who refuse to endorse Darwinism and who are saying there must be something other than Darwin that can't explain our DNA.
Yeah, when you see it, it just defies explanation through a Darwinian idea. And it's so fascinating to me to see how that same evolution community that 12 years ago was just very vocal and bragging, they're absolutely silent now. God has literally revealed himself so much that they have been silenced.
So many evolutionists are looking at the developments within genetics, epigenetics and all, and dimensionality, and they're actually not even publishing Darwinian explanations for how these things develop.
But there are none.
Because it's too...
There are none.
It's
beyond
their ability to comprehend. It's like trying to explain how consciousness arises from atoms and molecules.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here are all your best explanations of how we become self-aware.
Some of your best geneticists have begun to abandon at least what we would call traditional neo-Darwinism. Doesn't mean they've suddenly become creationists.
Right, no.
But they're abandoning it because they recognize it doesn't explain. So now they're desperately searching for something that does explain.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be surprised in the next 10, 20 years, your children are going to be taught some very bizarre things in school as an attempt to have a replacement for Darwinism.
Like aliens did this.
Aliens did
it. And the weird thing, when Richard Dawkins says that might be the answer, Well, then how did the aliens evolve if it's too complex on Earth?
Seems like the aliens might have been intelligent. So, yeah.
Why isn't it too complex on Mars or anywhere else? It's so silly.
Yeah, it is amusing. I think that I recall 2 years ago, of course, we were talking about the three-dimensionality of DNA.
Yeah.
And I was probably being a little simplistic in the sense of not really bringing into effect what I would now call an additional dimension. And that is really have to view DNA in your chromosomes four-dimensionally, because the very change over time that occurs from minute to minute in your chromosomes changes how they're structured, changes how they're bent, changes how they're folded. And that itself changes
the information content. Meaning?
Very much
now,
so.
Now,
very
that, much so. I think we're into an area that's difficult for the normal radio listener to even comprehend. I've been reading about this stuff for 20 years. It blows my mind. It's hard to comprehend. But could I give an analogy about what you presented 2 years ago about the multidirectionality of DNA? And tell me if this is valid.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, then we'll go to the fourth dimension. If somebody hands you a sheet of paper and they say, this is a great short story, the best ever written, it's one sheet of paper. And you read it and you get down from the top to the bottom. And at the end, you are so interested in this story, but you realize the story's not over and you're disappointed because where's the rest of the story? Mm-hmm. And they say, well, now start to read backwards.
Mm-hmm.
You say, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. Well, read the last word backwards and you find out the story continues going backwards. And then your mind is blown away because it really is the best story you've ever read. And you get back to the top, but it's not over yet. And then you realize if you read down and up the columns, the story continues. And by the time it's done, not only is it the most amazing story you've ever read, but it was written in a way that no human being could ever have accomplished.
Correct.
Is that a reasonable analogy?
Yes, that is. Yeah. And when I use an analogy similar to that, my challenge always is, you know, could you read that story? And of course, ultimately, because it'd be so sophisticated to read, because you have to add into that, you've got to fold the page, and you got to fold the page again, and then you got to twist the page just right, and then you got to twist it again,
right.
And then you got to bring another page over, and you got to loop that in.
Yeah,
so
it gets
by the,
super sophisticated.
So by the time you're done with that, could you read that story? And the truth of the matter is, no, I really don't know how I could read that story. Well, then how would you write that story? Well, that story would not be able to be written, and yet it is written. It's been written. It's called your chromosomes in your cells.
Well, so the ultimate intelligence conceivable would be required to write the genetic code.
Yes.
And it really is a code. It's information.
Yes. It would be an intelligence far beyond anything we could even comprehend, let alone understand.
To devise it and then to put it in millions of species.
Yes.
In bacteria and plants and animals. Wow.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what we mean when we say the DNA is read in multiple directions.
Mm-hmm.
Like you read it in one way, you make a protein molecule that performs a task.
Right.
You read it backwards, it makes a different protein molecule that does a different task.
Or it may make an RNA that doesn't make a protein, but the RNA itself performs a task of going over to help you read DNA somewhere else. A lot of DNA in your chromosomes is used to read other portions of the DNA. So you don't just read the DNA by itself. You have to have help from other portions of the DNA.
It's like a card catalog index into the DNA. So you're getting
That's
to the right.
That's a very good analogy.
You're getting to the right part at the right time.
Right.
Okay. So now you add the fourth dimension.
Yes.
And it almost sounds like science fiction, but it's real.
Right. But it's real. How this DNA folds, how it bends, is a constant dynamic, changing minute after minute, but yet that itself changes the informational content. More so, you have in your body 23 pairs of chromosomes.
Yes.
Chromosome number one is not physically separated all the time from chromosome number 6 or chromosome number 15. And there'll be times they will bump up against each other, and information on one of the chromosomes is used to read the information on another chromosome.
Now, that's like taking a book, like say Lord of the Rings, 3 volumes, it was really written as 1 volume, 1,000 pages. And you take page number 247 and 689, you fold them, you put them together,
correct,
and only then
can you read
the continuation
next, right,
of what happened to Frodo after the eagle carried him off the volcano.
That's exactly it, right.
Come on.
That's exactly it, yes.
It's too much.
And then we go beyond that. We now, just in the last few months, have begun to understand something that's been observed for a while, but not fully understood, and that is that not only do you have the what we call nitrogenous bases on DNA, which would be the adenine, the thymine, the guanine, the cytosine, which we abbreviate ATGC.
Yeah, so
a lot of people have seen those sequences.
Right. We just lost a chunk of the audience, but guys, you can stay with us because your DNA basically is made up of four different letters.
Right. It's ATGC.
And they're DNA, repeated 3 billion times
DNA
over.
Is a four-letter language. And it translates over to RNA into three-letter words. I always tell my students, not four-letter words, three-letter words.
Three-letter words.
But what we now know is that the letters are more complicated than just A, T, G, C.
Wow.
It'd be like you have an A, but then a minute later the A has an accent mark on it.
Yeah.
And a minute later the A has an underline over it. And a minute later the A has a different kind of accent mark on it. So it constantly keeps changing the information content of that A every minute, minute to minute.
And we see that in human language, right? We speak, we have, say, vowels.
Yes.
Long vowel sounds, short vowel sounds. We have accents. Mm-hmm. We have tildes. If you read Greek, the accents are relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Yeah. Have you studied Greek?
Just a little bit, just enough to know that.
Well, our producer out here, Will Duffy, has taught beginning Greek. Mm-hmm. I studied Greek for some years. And yeah, it's very relevant. Mm-hmm. Well, God created us wired for language. He dispersed men with languages at the Tower of Babel, and he created the language of our DNA. So it's not surprising that the letters would have variation in the meaning of the letters.
And this becomes, I would perceive, as the beginning of a link, perhaps, between the DNA informational content and what's known as epigenetics, which seems to be a informational content of the cell beyond the DNA.
Yeah.
Because we don't know exactly how big the gulf is. We don't know exactly what the linkage is or is not. It's hard to understand what the relationship is, and it's hard to understand where the information in the epigenetics is related to the information in the DNA.
So the concept is from epigenetics, and this is a huge field that's exploding right now.
And I'll tell you what, just as a little aside, evolutionists, I defy, this is a challenge, any of you out there listening that are skeptical, this whole creation stupidity, Bible-thumping morons, everything, I would defy you. You can write to me at the Creation Research. I would defy you to give any rational attempt at an explanation of epigenetics from a Darwinian position.
This is...
I defy you. This is the gauntlet thrown down.
Yeah.
It absolutely is completely contrary to any prediction that Darwinism ever made.
So I think 98% of the audience doesn't know what we mean when we say epigenetics. Let me take a stab at being a pastor of a Bible church and a talk show host and not a scientist. I have to simplify things. So the cell.
Actually, I do too.
Well, yeah, you're simplifying tremendously already. I have to dumb it down even more.
Well, I have to simplify for even me to understand.
Well, I don't know about that. Kevin Anderson, we're speaking to microbiologist Kevin Anderson with the Creation Research Society, the one organization in the world that does actual original research and puts it out. They've got a laboratory near the Grand Canyon. You guys have your iDino project we heard about last week from Mark Armitage.
Right.
That is so exciting. But okay, so for epigenetics, a cell, Darwin thought it was a blob of protoplasm.
Correct.
It's been described as complex, more complex than the space shuttle, almost like a little city.
Yes.
And if it was like a little city, might a cell have a million machines in it? Is that possible?
Oh, absolutely.
A million or millions of machines in
a
single cell.
Yes.
And we have trillions of cells in our body.
Yes.
So you have something like a city, and in the center of the city you have downtown, and in downtown you have, say, the central library.
Mm-hmm.
That central library might be like the DNA molecule. There's your genome right there. It doesn't have all the information of the city in the library, but that's where most of it is, most tightly condensed.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it is. But then if you go a mile away to a train station, there's a sign. And that sign tells you what the train schedule is. Well, that's more information. Mm-hmm. So epigenetics says not all the information is in the nucleus, in the genome, in the DNA molecule. It's scattered all over the cell, and you find this information where you need it and when you need it.
Right. That the membrane structure itself would contain information.
Like the cell wall?
Well, the membrane would be part of the envelope, the cell wall. Now, humans don't have cell wall. That's part of why
that's a plant.
Right. That's part of why you're so flexible. You'd be pretty stiff if you had a cell wall.
Sorry about that.
Right.
But our cell membrane.
But a lot of cells do have cell wall. Right. But there's a cell envelope, which in part of the cell envelope is a cell membrane. Mm. So even the very structure of the cell membrane epigenetically would seem to contain information that would affect the functioning of the cell.
This is just too much.
The positioning of cytoskeleton proteins within the cell, the positioning of organelles themselves. And that's the thing. We kind of talk a bit mysteriously about epigenetics because there's still so much that's not known. Mm. But there does seem to be some level of informational content in the cell that influences the action of the cell, influences even the heredity of the cell, that may not clearly be linked to just the DNA. So the idea is perhaps inheritance is more than just the DNA.
And when a man and a woman come together, as Jesus said, God made us male and female at the beginning of creation. He mm-hmm. said, not after billions of years, mm-hmm. like Reasons to Believe or the Discovery Institute. Mm-hmm. They're wrong. God mm-hmm. made us recently. But when God did that, he blessed us with the ability to procreate, and where the two become one flesh, literally in a child.
Yes.
But it's not just the DNA molecules that come together. It's two gametes. Mm-hmm. It's the sperm and the ovum. Mm-hmm. And that ovum has an entire cell environment, a
Correct.
Living cell, not just the DNA.
Correct. Correct.
And so the sperm comes together, and now you have not only the genetic component of mom and dad, but you have that living environment, and that environment may contain Mm-hmm. vast amounts mm-hmm. of information.
Some of the early work that's been done with embryo development, for example, in certain animals, is in that embryo state, that the fertilized egg, if they go in and they make some alterations, not to the DNA, but alterations to some of the cell structure itself, it changes the development of the organism. Mm. And that's part of some of that early work in epigenetics where they're saying, okay, there seems to be something more in the cell than just the DNA directing what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's still a lot unknown, but it really comes down to epigenetics as a field that is exploding. It's a field that there is so much that we don't know, because from what we understand at the moment, it seems to be even more complicated than our basic understanding of DNA. And that just moves it to whole new levels of sophistication.
Could you tell us now about the laboratory? Because CRS, Creation Research Society, is the only creation ministry that maintains an actual functional lab.
Correct.
So
Correct.
Where is it? What's it called?
It's located near Chino Valley, Arizona, which is just north of Prescott, Arizona. Mm-hmm. Many people have heard of Prescott.
Sure.
The lab is named the Van Andel Creation Research Center. It was named after the primary benefactor at the time, which was J. Van Andel. Mm-hmm. In it, we house certain amount of equipment. Mark Armitage's microscopes, who you just interviewed last week, his electron microscopes and his light microscopes are all housed at the facility.
Wow. So these are young Earth creationists with electron microscope technology available, mm-hmm. and that's what makes you guys dangerous.
Yeah, we hope.
You guys.
We hope, yes.
So
yes.
You have an electron microscope and other sophisticated
yes.
equipment.
Yes.
And you're using this resource and other resources in your iDino project?
Correct. What also makes us very dangerous to evolutionists is we all have secular credentials. We all know what we're doing, and that scares them. So, yes, these things are all being used as part of the iDino project. We have obtained some samples. We are in the process, as he described, of beginning to analyze the samples.
I believe you guys are the first in the world to get original biological material from a Triceratops horn.
as far as we know, no one else has found that. And as far as we know, the preliminary evidence would be that we have found some biological material. It's all subject to, we've got a lot more to go.
Yeah, this right. is preliminary. Right. This is preliminary. Not yet yeah. peer-reviewed.
Right. Well, it's not yet done in the research itself. We really just started.
Yeah.
But we've already had some very interesting, I guess we'd say, developments as far as this looks like what it is. This looks like this could be, and it needs to be followed up on. So very quickly, we've already had some things that have us kind of very focused and very interested.
Yeah.
And as far as we know, no one has analyzed a Triceratops horn. It has both a positive and a negative, and the Triceratops horns would not have the protection of the outer portion.
Like our skeleton is protected bone. Inside
right.
our body.
Right. Well, not only, but a bone, the bone marrow itself, where the actual soft tissue is protected by all the calcified,
right.
by all the
okay.
calcified material outside of that. You don't have it to nearly that extent in a horn, but a horn is much highly more vesselated. A horn is more highly tissued. Mm-hmm. So we have kind of plus and minus. Mm-hmm. And so within that, we have a lot of tissue that potentially could be there.
To my untrained eye, when I look at Mary Schweitzer from North Carolina State University, she has photographs of these bone cells, osteocytes, and they're amazing. But what you guys have are photos of those bone cells in a matrix as they would appear in the original bone. She's got them floating in solution.
Right.
This is
right.
a whole right. level of additional confirmation.
If what we have initially seen.
If it holds up.
Holds up.
So you're not declaring this is found. This
no.
is just preliminary.
We're just saying this is preliminary.
What it appears.
We got a lot of tests
right.
to verify. But
okay.
if what we've initially found holds up, we would be the first to actually find a intact piece of tissue.
Wow. From a Triceratops.
From a Triceratops horn.
Very correct. Exciting.
Yes.
Okay. So that's what's going on in the lab. I know there are other projects in the lab. Creation Research Society, you guys have over 1,000 members worldwide, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. a lot of your members are voting members.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Voting member is someone who holds a advanced degree, a master's degree or above in a scientific field. So voting member is someone that, in essence, has advanced scientific training.
So the scientists who were at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship meeting last Friday night mm-hmm. who did a wonderful job presenting. Nobody wanted to go home, everybody. The CRS scientists, they all stayed for an hour answering people's questions. Mm-hmm. It was really very gracious of them. But the kinds of degrees and the specialties that were there, could we maybe go through and just list off, like, what kind of specialists were there?
Well, you had a PhD in physics. You had several PhDs in physics. You had PhDs in astronomy, PhDs like myself, PhDs in microbiology, PhDs in biology, PhDs in geology. Mm. So you represented all of those fields. Yes.
Yeah. I remember almost 40 years ago, Theodosius Dobzhansky wrote his famous piece, "Nothing in Biology Makes Sense Except in the Light of Evolution." Mm-hmm. And now we're coming up on a 40-year anniversary, and I've been preparing a 40-year look back that we're going to do on Real Science mm-hmm. Friday soon. And it turns out you have a member of the National Academy of Sciences who said, you know, I looked at that, and then in the last 40 years, not one of the Nobel Prizes in biology was given to have anything to do with evolution.
Exactly.
Nothing.
In fact, I would go as far as to say that now what we would say is nothing in evolution makes sense, even in light of evolution.
Yeah. It's a theory in crisis, but there are the high priests like the P.Z. Myers, Richard Dawkins, who deny that. But there is such an intimidation.
Oh, absolutely.
That the people working in the field know that Darwinism can't explain genetics.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why some of them say it must be aliens.
Yeah. Or we don't know what. We're seeing more and more of that kind of response is, well, we just don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's really, in some ways, a disingenuous response because you do know what it is. You just don't want to admit what it is.
Because information only comes from intelligence. Atoms and molecules cannot give rise to information. So now you have evolutionists who are denying mm-hmm. the existence of information. Even.
Right, Right.
So yeah. Atheism leads you to ignorance.
And I wonder what information they use to deny
right.
the information.
Yeah. Right.
They wind up tripping on themselves.
Yes, exactly. And Kevin, we only have a few minutes left. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me, you said you have a degree in mm-hmm. microbiology. Mm-hmm. Tell me about it and where you've come from.
Yeah, I'm the type of individual that is very frustrating to the evolutionist community because I'm not supposed to exist.
Mm.
I have a doctorate in microbiology. I was a National Institute of Health postdoctoral fellow.
Ah.
I've been university professor. I've been a senior scientist and research director for biotech companies. So I've done research. I've published
wow.
research. My research record, my publication record is better than most of my critics. They don't like that. That obviously doesn't work well because we're not supposed to be scientists. We're not supposed to know what we're doing. We're supposed to be fumbling, bumbling, and just pounding the Bible
right.
around.
So they don't like
yeah.
you.
Absolutely
and
not.
So this is why
absolutely
I do
not.
Like you,
because
they don't like you. But CRS would love to have you back full-time running the lab.
Yes.
And because we're all up against financial mm-hmm. constraints with the economy, mm-hmm. CRS has a significant annual budget, mm-hmm. but they need more support financially.
Right.
So maybe there are people listening right now who could go to the CRS website and make a significant donation, call up, get a tour of the lab, and just step up to the plate and help mm-hmm. us continue to fight this battle.
Or even an insignificant donation.
Or even an insignificant.
Because yeah, all donations are welcome. Clearly,
what a great point.
Right, we look for everybody and anybody. And I'll tell you, here's one thing also to seriously consider about becoming a member of the Creation Research Society. Even if you're not a scientist, you're saying, well, I don't know anything about the science stuff. When you become a member of the Creation Research Society, what you're doing is you're planting your flag in a group of people that have chosen to stand up in front of the powers that are against God, the powers against God as a creator. And what you're doing is you're acknowledging, I am going to join this group. I am going to stand with them. I am putting myself forward. I may not understand what they're saying all the time. I am not technically trained as a scientist, but I am putting my flag here with them. And so when you become a member of the society, what you're doing is you're taking a side. And what Christ said, the worst thing is to never take a side.
Wow, what a great point. And the peer-reviewed quarterly journal that you guys put out, sure, there are people, including me, who can't understand every article because they're specialties, but you guys...
I don't even understand every article.
No, if it's in a specialty in another field, but you guys put out plenty of information that everybody
yes.
can understand.
Yes, yes.
And your website has a store with wonderful DVDs and books, so there are all kinds of ways to educate yourself, become more proficient at explaining the reason that we have our faith in Jesus Christ
yes.
as our creator from CRS. It's all there. Kevin Anderson, it's an honor to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much. It has been a pleasure to be here.
Wow, what a joy. That's Kevin Anderson, microbiologist with the Creation Research Society. I want to encourage you, if you're in Colorado, every second Friday, come on out if you can make it to the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. Our website, RealScienceFriday.com. If you are looking for great DVDs, great books, if you're looking for what we have, 5 years worth of Real Science Friday, all assembled in a collection, the Real Science Friday collection, 2006 through 2011, you could get that at our store. So just go to RealScienceFriday.com, click on the store, and have fun. It's like a kid in a candy shop. When I go in there, I can't believe the fascinating materials we have that are so available, and they help keep us on the air. God bless you. Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. We have a brand new Creation DVD that I think you'll love. In fact, let me quote our board operator, Russ Holmes. Russ said this about Programming of Life. He said, "This is the video that I've been waiting 20 years to see." Boy, is Russ right. This is a fabulous Creation DVD about the life of the cell, what happens inside the cell, the majesty of God. Just check out RealScienceFriday.com. Click on the store.